had a little bit of fun. Look at Psalm 44:8. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. These are the children who are saying this. The children are saying in verse 8, in God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. How do you get to 44:8? You get there by starting with 44:1. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us, what work thou didst in their days in the times of old. We have heard from our fathers. I enjoyed hearing my dad's testimony of salvation. My dad was saved when he was 13 years of age. I enjoyed hearing my grandfather's testimony because he let it be known. He was saved at the age of 8 under the preaching of R.A. Torrey. It is always interesting to hear how men have been delivered from sin and hear about the days of old and what God has done for men in the past, especially when it's your father, when it's your grandfather, your great-grandfather. Today I'd like to publicly thank God for my father and for what he has meant to me and the fact that he knew the Lord as his Savior and that he, as we see in Psalm 44:1, that I had heard with my ears from my father what work God did in his days in the times of old. I want us to look at verse 1 and notice the author of what was heard. Let's look first of all at the title of the author of what was heard. Who was doing the speaking and who was doing the hearing? It says in verse 1, our fathers have told us. They are the ones who are doing the speaking. They are the ones who are doing the telling. Who? Our fathers. That word father is an interesting word. It's the first word in the Hebrew lexicon. If you were to take a dictionary and look up the first word in the English dictionary, I don't know what it would be. Probably something like aardvark or something like that. But the first word in the Hebrew lexicon is the word av or ab, aleph, beth. You look it up in a concordance. You say, I don't know Hebrew. Then go home, get your Strong's concordance out, go to the back where it lists all the Hebrew words and find word number one. You know what you're going to find? It's the word father. It's the very first word. Even an infant can pronounce the word that comes from ab. Anybody can guess what that is in the New Testament? We cry unto our Father, Abba, Abba. Even a baby can say Abba. It's one of the first words that a child would learn. It's used 3 times in the New Testament concerning our relationship with our Father God. The word father speaks of a head or a founder of a household, originator, producer, one upon whom you depend for life. We're looking at the title of the author, Father, because today there is an assault on fatherhood. The rise of feminism has made some apologize for living in a patriarchal society where it is the man who leads and rules the family. Instead of father knows best today, we have somebody like Bart Simpson's dad. Because people like to make fun of what a father is. It's Bart Simpson's dodo dad. Or there's other shows where the father is a bumbling idiot. Because that's what our society wants to make men look like. Men who take the lead. Men who take their responsibility. But they like to portray fathers as irresponsible. They like to make men, fathers, look like somebody who is a bumbling idiot. They want to make them look like monster males. And unfortunately, many fathers portray that. In 2002, they said that in America, 34% of all children are living in households without their biological father. More than a quarter of American children are raised in fatherless homes. About 40% of the kids who are growing up in father-absent homes haven't seen him in the past year. You want to know why we're having the problems we are in our society today? It's because of the lack of men, fathers, who will take the responsibility to being the leader, the head, the leader in the home. Folks, we should not shrink to the trash of Hollywood. We should do what the Bible tells us. We should try to live up to the portrayal of a man, of a father, as the Bible displays him, taking the lead without apology, as God designed. We need to use, not abuse, the authority that God has given us. I am not talking about this as a cultural issue. This is a creation issue. Paul made it very clear to Timothy in 1 Timothy 2:13, "For Adam was first formed, then Eve." The children here in Psalm 44:1 heard from their father spiritual things. Fathers easily like to talk of all kinds of things, and nothing wrong with talking about these things like sports, cars, hunting, their work, and so forth. But why is it, men, when it comes to spiritual things, our tongues are tied? Spurgeon once said, "When fathers are tongue-tied religiously with their offspring, need they wonder if their children's hearts remain sin-tied?" The sad fact is that what children are hearing with their ears is not coming from their fathers, but from some heathen teacher, some newsman, Hollywood, some friend. And you better believe they talk about their religion. Secular humanism, atheism, paganism. You better believe that the world, those fathers out there, have no problem speaking about the things that they believe are important, the things that are eternally unimportant. Here in Psalm 44:1, it is the father doing the talking. It is the children who are doing the listening. Two things are rarely seen today: a father speaking of spiritual matters and children who are listening. I've told you the story of, I was listening to a tape. In fact, I tried to play it this last year for my boys. It's an old cassette tape that my great uncle Dan, I'm not saying my great uncle Dan because he was great, but he was because he was my dad's uncle. That makes him my great uncle. My great uncle Dan, when he was 90 years old in the mid 70s, was being interviewed by one of my aunts. For some of you, it's your aunts. And she was interviewing him and asking him questions about how he grew up in the plains of South Dakota when they came from Germany, when his parents came from Germany. And talking about how in family devotions, you could not stir, you could not get restless, you had to sit still. Discipline. Fathers made their sons and their daughters sit still and listen. There's the title of the author, it's father. I want you to see, secondly, the integrity of the author. Because it says, what thou didst. What work thou didst. Notice that the fathers didn't talk about themselves. They talked about what God did. It is easy for us to spend time bragging about ourselves. Sometimes we're so insecure that we are concerned that our kids think much of us rather than much of God, so we try to impress them. Men or fathers today want a legacy. The Bible talks about integrity. Listen to Proverbs 20, verse 7. A righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. A man of integrity. Gentlemen, we should not be so much concerned about legacy as integrity. A man of integrity will automatically have a good legacy. An irresponsible father, rather than a man of integrity, leaves the Bible teaching to his wife. Nothing wrong with the wife teaching, but it is the father's responsibility. Too often the wife has to take the initiative to get the kids to church or Sunday school on time. Or they leave the teaching to the church or to the Christian school. But here it is who is doing the teaching here in verse 1? It is the fathers who have told us. The psalmist said, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days. Notice how the verse ends. In the times of old. Do you like hearing about the olden days? Children make fun of the things that their parents went through. You didn't even have a remote. You had to get up and change channels. You didn't know what a cell phone was in 1976. The greatest slam is when you're driving by like a Model T and said, Dad, was that new in your day? They make fun. You know, they type something on a computer and they can back up. They can do spell check. And you talk about typewriters. What was that? Yeah, you had to learn how to spell. You know, it's those days of old that we sometimes need to hear about. But I'm not talking about the things that we used to do. I'm talking about the things that God has done. Those things in the days of old. You know, you tell your kids, you know, I went to school uphill both ways. And I did. I showed them that this week. This last week, we drove to where I grew up in Monroe, Nebraska, on the farm. And I went to a one-room schoolhouse for 3 or 4 months before they closed it down and sent us to the school where we could learn more, where I waited for everybody to catch up with me. And we went up one hill and down another, up another one. So I literally went uphill both ways. Fathers need to tell children. Children need to listen. They say, oh, that's the old stuff. No, you know what? You need to hear this. You need to hear about perhaps some of the difficult times and how hard it was to go to church. I remember Maybelle Grable talking about how she would get to church years ago. Maybelle was a member here some years ago before she passed away. And she had some stories about getting to church in the winter and how hard it was. And you know what? It didn't matter if it was snowing or blizzarding. Somehow they had blankets there in the sled that the horse pulled, and they put hot bricks under there, and they got to church. They were determined. And so sometimes it's good for the kids who, you know, there's a little bit of ice outside that they wouldn't mind sliding on any other day, but today it's hard to get to church because the car may wreck, you know. You know, listen to the old days when people went through great trials and difficulties to do what they thought was right. Jeremiah 6:16 talks about going back to the old paths. Psalm 143:5 says, I remember the days of old. I muse on the work of thy hands. I meditate on all thy works. I remember the days of old. Now, my granddad, Edwin J. Unruh, used to say, don't talk to me about the good old days. They weren't good. They were hard. They were difficult. And yet, almost in the same breath, he would say, you know what it used to be like? You used to be able to go to a church service and you'd hear good, godly singing. You used to see disciplined children. You used to see, and then he would talk about the good old days that weren't so good. And he wasn't talking about the days of old being good because they were hard. He was talking about them being good because people served God. The author of what was heard, we see in verse 1. The topic of what was heard, we see in verses 2 to 3. Children love stories. You know, especially when they're really little, they love to hear stories. What stories are they hearing today? Here, it is God's work in the old days. Notice, it's not Israel's work. It's God's work. It is a recognition that God was behind everything. I want you to note the pronouns thou and thy in verse 2. How thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantedst them. How thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. Now, you go back in Israel's history, and they are the ones who are fighting these battles. And yet, they are saying this was God who did this. It is God who gave us the victory. Note what was learned from their fathers in verse 3. It says, "For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them." What are some of the stories that these people might have told? Yeah, there was a day when we marched around a city 7 times and the walls fell down flat and we got into that city and defeated the enemy. You don't believe me? It happened. There was a day when God split wide open the Red Sea and we walked through on dry land and we turned around and watched God drown the Egyptian army who was pursuing us. There was a day when we needed to cross the Jordan River to get to Jericho. And we watched as the priests who were carrying the ark, as their feet touched the brim of that water, and we watched that water stack up to the city of Adam, and we walked across on dry ground. You know what the proof of that is? We have these 12 stones sitting here today. There was a day when the sun stood still. There was a day when we woke up one morning and 185,000 of the enemy were dead. Boy, talk about stories that kids would love to listen. And they wouldn't say, you know, we did this. God's the one who split that Red Sea. God is the one who killed those 185,000 enemy. God is the one who did this. And they bragged upon God. Is it any wonder when you get to verse 8 that the kids say what? Look at verse 8. "In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever." The topic of what was heard. Three things I'd like to see in this verse 3. Number one, God's protection. The psalmist says, "Thy right hand." God's right hand is a figure for His coming between His people and the enemy. That's God's right hand. You go back to the Song of Moses in Exodus 15, after they came through the Red Sea, and you will note repeatedly throughout that chapter, it is talking about God's right hand, and it specifies God's right hand coming between Israel and the Egyptians. You see, God's right hand speaks of authority. In fact, somebody is today seated at God's right hand. It is Jesus Christ. Psalm 16 verse 11 says, "At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore." Isaiah 41:10 says, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." The right hand speaks of God's protection there in verse 3. Secondly, it talks about thine arm. Why does he repeat this? Why does he talk about the right hand, then the arm, and then he talks about the light of thy countenance? Well, thine arm speaks about God's power. Whereas God's right hand speaks of his protection, thine arm speaks of God's power. It is a figure for an effectual power that carries through the thing designed, Kyle and Delitzsch say in their commentary. Listen to Job 40, verses 6 and 9. "Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind, Hast thou an arm like God?" Let me ask you that question. Do you have an arm like God? When Job gets to the end, when he's gone through all of these trials and sorrows and tribulation and suffering, and he's questioning as to why this is all happening, God says, "Do you have an arm like I do?" And then God goes on to speak about all the things he's created, the Leviathan, and so forth. Do you have an arm like God has? It speaks of God's power. God's arm speaks of trust, dependence, reliance on my part. Isaiah 51:5 says, "On mine arm shall they trust." You see, if you trust in a man, if you trust in the right arm of a man, you're going to be severely disappointed. And you're going to be cursed. Jeremiah 17:5 says, "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm and whose heart departeth from the Lord." But here in Psalm 44:3, the Father is telling in his Son's ears that it is God's arm. It is his power that delivers. It is not the Father's wisdom. It's not his Father's business knowledge or acumen that provides for the family. It's not because Daddy is so smart. It's because God is so powerful. You know how little boys like to brag about their dads? There were 3 schoolboys arguing, bragging about their fathers. First schoolboy said, "My dad scribbles a few words on a piece of paper. He calls it a poem and he gets $50 for it." Second boy says, my dad scribbles a few things on a piece of paper, calls it a song. He gets $100. Another boy says, my dad scribbles a few things on a piece of paper, calls it a sermon, and it takes 8 men to collect the money. You see, boys like, my boys never brag like that, but boys, girls like to brag on their fathers as if it's their dad who's so powerful. I remember bragging about my dad to a neighbor boy. He was across the street in Omaha. He would brag to me about his dad selling subscriptions to U.S. News and World Report. Is that what it's called? U.S. News and World Report. He said, if my dad wasn't alive and doing what he's doing, you wouldn't have the news. Boy, I wish I knew then what I know today. I said, you know what my dad does? He sells insurance, Chuck. If you wouldn't have insurance, when he dies, you're not going to have anything. You know, I can come back at him. We like to brag on what our dads do, but you know what it comes down to? It is God. It is His power. So there's God's protection, His right hand. There's God's power, His arm. There's God's presence. That's what we see when it says, the light of thy countenance. The light of His countenance speaks of His presence. And it talks about the light of His countenance, because darkness speaks of loneliness and fear, but the light of God's presence gives boldness and courage. And why is God doing this for them? As we see in the last part of the verse, because thou hadst a favor unto them. Not because of something that was in them. It was simply God's favor. Nothing but Yahweh's free grace. Folks, what a lesson. What God does for us, He simply does as a favor. He provides salvation not because of our goodness, not because we deserve it, but because of His favor. It's amazing grace. You see, when it comes right down to it, there's no one we can really brag on except for God. What do you have that was not given to you? Paul asks in 1 Corinthians. What do you have that was not given to you as a gift? Some of you may say, well, I've got good looks. People like to look at me as I walk by because I'm so handsome or I'm so beautiful. You know what? That was given to you. Well, I've got lots of money. You know what? That was given to you. I'm not discounting the fact that you must work hard for it, but in the end, ultimately, God has given that to you. And today we must acknowledge that God is the provider, even as these we see in Psalm 44 did. So we see in this chapter the author of what was heard, the topic of what was heard. And now I want us to see in verses 4 to 8 the impact of what was heard. Because now we sometimes wonder if kids ever hear us. That went in one ear and right out the other, sometimes we may say. But I want you to notice the pronouns. That the pronouns in verses 4 and following are no longer the pronouns them, they, and their. The pronouns are now we, my, and I. So let's see what these children have learned. You know, sometimes it may not seem like kids are learning anything. And some may not like the fact that kids have to sit in church with adults, that we don't have a children's church. Let me tell you something. Your kids are picking up more than you think. You'd be surprised what they pick up. We don't always have to dumb down to speak to them. When my boys were much younger, I remember them asking me questions about a sermon I had preached 2 or 3 months before. It just blew me away that they literally understood or heard something and now they had a question about it. Or now that was coming to mind as they were facing something. Let's look at the impact of what was heard. First of all, we see in verse 4, it's in the present tense. Thou art my king, O God, command deliverances for Jacob. Know what the children or the child is saying. Thou art my king, O God. That is in the present tense. You know, a father is honored when his child follows his footsteps, whether it's someone who is good in sports, someone who is good at hunting. But there is nothing more important and nothing more of a blessing than when a child father follows his dad's footsteps and says, thou art my God, O King. And that should be the goal, man. To make much of God, to talk of His greatness, so that children can one day pray and say this, I have heard with my ears, O God, what my daddy told me, what work you did in his days in the times of old. Thou art my king, the child says. Why? Because of what was happening in verse 1. The fathers were telling them things. The greatness of God. We see the future tense in verses 5 and 6. Through thee will we push down our enemies. For I will not trust my bow. Verse 6. What I heard my father say God did for him in the old days, God will do for me. You know, sometimes I hear stories from fathers, and it's an encouragement to me, you know what? What they went through, what he heard, the things he experienced. How often, gentlemen, do things come to mind when you're facing a difficulty and you think of the time what your dad told of a time when he faced something similar, and you say, you know what? My dad went through it, I can too. Spiritually, we can face the trials and the tribulations because of what our fathers have faced. You go back in church history and you know what our fathers have gone through. You hear what they went through during the Grand Inquisitions, the Spanish Inquisition in the 1500s, as men were burned at the stake for simply possessing a Bible. And you look at the persecutions that we face and say, I can't do it. You know what? Our fathers did. They learned that victory over the enemy is through thee. It's through thy name. They learned that even if they were skilled with the bow or if they were good at fencing with the sword, they could not trust those things. No doubt the children had heard about the 700 chosen men of Benjamin who were left-handed. Every one could sling stones at an hair and not miss. I love that story. That mention in Judges 20 verse 16. Left-handed men who could sling a stone and come within a hairbreadth of not missing. That's pretty accurate. I can't even do that with a scope on my rifle. But they dared not do so in their own power. Verse 6 is in the first person singular. I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. I must renounce my own strength and my righteousness and look at my strength as a failure and look to Jesus alone. I will not trust by what I can do. Where did they learn this? They learned this, verse 1. Our fathers have told us. So we have the present tense in verse 4. We have the future tense in verses 5 and 6. We have the perfect tense in verses 7 and 8. What is the perfect tense? In Greek grammar, I know this was Hebrew, but in Greek grammar, the perfect tense denotes that what I am experiencing today is a result of some past action. It's what God did for my father. He did for me. I am the beneficiary. The benefits continue from what God did for my fathers. The benefits continue for me today. Let me give an illustration. We talk about the greatest generation. Did we benefit from the greatest generation here in the United States? Who was the greatest generation according to some? Those who fought in World War II. Are we still benefiting from what those men did? Yes, we are not speaking German or Japanese today. We still speak English. Well, at least most of us. What? That's the perfect tense. What my fathers did, I still experience the benefits from them. That's what he is saying in verse 7. But thou hast saved us from our enemies and hast put them to shame that hated us. God's deliverance of our forefathers is a deliverance from which I still benefit. Folks, the ultimate test for successful rearing of children is to hear them say what we read in verse 8. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. That is the only boasting that is bearable when they boast on God. They didn't learn to boast in themselves. They didn't learn to boast in the family name. They didn't learn to boast in anything but in God. Therefore, we praise his name forever. What is happening in our churches today and in our families today is not what we see in verse 8. And perhaps much of the blame can be put to the fathers because we are not doing what we see in verse 1. Our children are not hearing with their ears what their fathers have told them because their fathers are not telling them. You say, I didn't have a godly father. I didn't have a father who did what verse 1 says. Well, then you know something? That doesn't mean you can't stop the cycle and start anew. A boy who grows up saying verses 4 through 8 does not become such a man by accident. Verses 4 through 8 happen on purpose. From verses 1 through 3, the children ground their confidence. In verse 4, provokes their thankfulness. Till you get to verse 8. What joy to one day be able to hear your child repeat verses 4 through 8, especially verse 8. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. Our Heavenly Father,